No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time to talk about the defense from that great win in Miami on Thursday night. Joining me to talk about that is our good friend, longtime friend of the show, Alec Poulianos. Alec, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Great to see the Ravens back in the win column and the momentum in the right direction for the season.
Yeah, it's a whole different world we live in from just, what, 5 days ago?
Yeah.
So the specter of potentially losing to the Bears with Tyler Huntley and no Lamar Jackson is very recent in our lives. And not only did they make it by that hurdle, they played on a short week in Miami, which is always a tough nut. Any road game on a Thursday is one of the things in my schedule scoring system every year is a big negative. So you don't want to be playing those games if you can avoid it. And now the Ravens have one left, and it's against a division rival, which is pretty well perfect. They play Cincinnati on Thanksgiving night.
Indeed. I would say we were lucky it was in Miami. You know, not the heart of a flight. Plus, you have the, Florida boys factor. Mm-hmm. I think that helped as well. And you were there, and it sounded like a lot of Ravens fans were there.
Oh, yeah.
Based on the sound. So there was travel, but luckily they did have a lot of support. And even Tua made a comment that the crowd noise made an issue on 4th and 1. It was at least a little bit closer to a home game than most away games.
I think most people who are listening to this podcast might also follow me on Twitter and have seen the thing, but weirdest coincidence ever. We happen to have seats. They were actually not directly next to Coach Evans. She sipped the tally films seats, but they were in the same row. And we actually just sat next to him before some people showed up, and we were a few seats down. Incredible coincidence that would happen. I've run into, friends on the road a fair amount when we've done it. You run into a similar crew all the time when you're at the airport in Baltimore who are leaving for games. And it's a lot of the same photographers and journalists and then a lot of other fans who just travel to games and whatnot. But this was a really weird one. This is a guy who lives in Tallahassee, and he just happened to be going to the game, and I happened to be going to the game, and we're in the same row, which is the weirdest thing. But
it is
great
bonkers.
Catching up with Coach.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've had that experience once before too. I bought concert tickets and was literally right next to a friend of mine. And that was, we did not, coordinate that. Ironically, we were going to see a different concert together, so it was just kind of funny that we got to do two. One of them unexpected. But that's awesome. I'm glad you had a great time.
Yeah, lots of fun. That's for sure. We were only we did a 13-hour round trip. Effectively, got there
at
5:30 and left at 6 a.m. the next morning. So we didn't have any time to sleep. We basically got there, drove 2 hours, went to the game, drove 2 hours back to our hotel, slept for like an hour and a half, got up and got on the plane. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk football here.
Sure.
Miami was coming off a big win playing at home. They just trashed the Falcons 34-10 the previous week. And it was a game I think Kirk Cousins played in the previous week. But still, a win is a win. And Atlanta, a fairly decent NFC team for what they are. Definitely a team that had a chance to win the South until Tampa Bay kind of went crazy and started winning. Maybe they still do even. Maybe, there are certain Falcons fans who believe that. But anyway, the Dolphins started out like most teams have against the Ravens. They outsnapped them badly in the first half, 39-23. And that was despite, a 14-6 score at halftime. Still didn't seem entirely comfortable to me at that point.
Sure. Yeah, I think watching teams continue to go down the field, usually in the first half, and you know, have these longer drives is obviously scary. But I will say, like, I am so happy to see people settling for field goals. And I'm really keen to see how this season continues to play out and how next season is and things of that nature. Because I feel like the field goal became so much less valuable with the new kickoff rules and the way that's playing out. So every time that they settle for a kick, a field goal, I'm pleased as punch, you know. Obviously, I was always pleased, but I'm even more pleased now because I feel like scoring's gotten a little bit easier this year.
This is an interesting philosophical question. I'm sure you understand this, but I'll just say it's a continuum there. So it depends on the team, obviously, but it also depends on where you are. So by the time they can get a field goal, you're probably happy they settle for a field goal. That's part of it. Okay, but what's, you know, points per drive are much less than three at this point. So maybe 2.0 maybe across the league, maybe slightly higher than that. I'd have to look. FTN has that chart all the time. But the all-time record is just slightly north of three. So, you know, there's basically been no team or you know, only a handful of teams in NFL history that you'd start a drive being happy if they settled for three. Okay. You might theoretically think that was true, but most of the time when you're, you know, starting a drive from your own, you know, 25, 30 yard line or whatever it might be, you still, three is not a good result. Overall.
Yeah, it's not a good result. I guess you're right. Like once they're down there, I'm happy. I'm also think like sometimes when they go, they take a field goal when I feel like they should, it's a good go for it situation. Oh, yeah. Like that makes me pleased too. because yeah, I feel like punting and like, let's say red zone opportunities are the like two ways that you can pin a team deep. In today's NFL, right? I don't think you can really expect off a kickoff to have we stuffed them at the 15. Like that doesn't happen anymore, you know? So anyways, I'm curious to see how that like strategy continues to play out this year. But anyways, the other nice thing too is I do sort of feel like the Ravens are starting to get back into a complimentary football perspective with the offense too. So I'm hoping that you know, the longer drives, we can provide a longer drive as well. And it's not as like dire on the defense. So, but yeah, it was concerning at the beginning, seeing them get out snapped again. It's not a good formula, particularly with the long term and how few defensive linemen and outside linebackers we have.
Right. I did want to hit on that. The Ravens in this game went to war with only eight, again, five defensive linemen, three outside linebackers. So Carl Lawson has not yet been called up. And I guess we knew already based on, and maybe they could have still made a change to the 53, but it seems like Carl Lawson will be a three-time elevation before he's added to the roster, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do it this week. And they're, you know, they elevated Keandre Jackson again, which is the weird one, even though he's played perfectly decently on special teams. And Taven Bryan, who has now taken a much larger role that we're going to get into here a little bit later, but his role much, much more significant than I guessed. And his role is kind of like Peebles plus right now. So we'll see. I'm not saying he's as good as Peebles, but his role in terms of when he's on the field is like Peebles plus.
Yep. I have that highlighted in purple here in the show sheet. I was surprised by that too. And that was one thing I definitely want to talk to you about. We'll talk about that more as we get later on, but yeah, that was a huge surprise. And my overarching like theme that I've been thinking about a lot with this team is they're up to a lot of shenanigans with the practice squad and elevations. They always are, but this year I feel like in particular, they're up to a lot of shenanigans and something's going to have to happen here. Like if they're going to use Bryan as much as they are, they're going to have to make a 53 move. And similarly, like, sure. What are we doing here with the outside linebacker situation? It feels like they're playing with fire there as well. And they haven't used practice squad elevations there yet. So maybe that's coming, right? We talked about Lawson, but still very interesting to see how they're trying to massage this roster over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Malik Ham, and for the last 2 weeks, this has kind of been a topic on the show. So I don't want to rehash everything on this, but I will say very surprised Malik Ham has not gotten a shot yet. Because he's a guy who can play some early down snaps, probably help you in terms of setting the edge. And the Ravens have gone to a completely different edge setting, you know, routine on early downs, really leaned into what I call uncovered nickel. I'll get into that a little bit. But Lawson if he's activated, he won't solve their early down problems because he's not a guy who's going to go in there and play a lot of early downs. He might make it possible for Green to play more early downs. That might be the answer. And then Green comes off the field on pass rush, which I think is a complete misuse of his talents.
Yes.
And if Lawson were an outstanding pass rusher, it might be worth it. If Lawson is the pass rusher he's been, you know, the last couple stops, I don't think it's worth it at all. I think he's more, right now, it seems like he's, the Ravens consider more of an insurance policy than anything. So if somebody else gets hurt, he's the next guy up, as opposed to he's a guy they're going to activate right away.
Yeah, the Ravens have been playing with so much fire the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I feel like the last 2 years, they've like dabbled with the four defensive linemen. Now they're doing this outside linebacker thing. And it makes me scratch my head. I really don't get it. But yeah, I'm equally surprised about Ham. I wouldn't be shocked if there's like some like wacko scenario where they really just want to see Ojabo snaps and they were like, this is his time. And after this, you know, mini buy, they start using Ham more. Maybe Ojabo's not on the team after a trade or something of that nature. But yeah, it's very surprising, Ken.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've certainly hashed on that topic, and I think we'll probably hit on that. We're going to do two trade-related shows this weekend. So I'm talking to Brian McFarland about like what sort of trades would fit under the cap. Who can the Ravens trade? Who can they not trade? You know, that kind of thing. And then we'll talk with Voss, and Voss is much more interested in going into the individual players and who the Ravens might pick up. So both, I think, will be good shows. Look for those over this mini buy-in before Tuesday, because Tuesday's at 4 o'clock is the trade deadline. So we'll be looking forward to that. All right. The offense certainly was more efficient overall than the Finns offense. The Finns had a lot of trouble converting third downs. But I wouldn't say the offense, even with Lamar having a really good statistical day, was like hyper efficient. It's still a little bit of barbelling of results. Got some problems in terms of individual plays that have caused problems. They gave up a couple sacks. It's the usual stuff in terms of letting big plays stall drives.
Right. Yeah, I think. I have a little bit of hope that the third quarter will be signs of more to come, and there was a little bit of rust, et cetera, in the first half. But obviously, you know, we got to wait and see. This team's notorious for, half game efforts, and sometimes that's enough because they have explosive quarters like we saw in the third quarter. But I definitely want to see them, you know, have more consistent results. But they get a little bit of a pass just given the circumstances with Lamar in his first game back. Short week, etc. That's
five of those six drives in the first half. Five of the six were three or four plays.
Yeah,
that's just incredible. And they did have a 9 yard field or whatever it was to work with after the fumble recovery. So that helped them score a touchdown. But the score at halftime could have been a lot different than it was. You know, without that turnover, I think you're in a different position. Yeah. And speaking of turnovers, they won the battle of turnover now. Maybe quietly, maybe not quietly, depending on how you believe it. 4-0 over the last two games, which have been nice cruising wins both times. That's been obviously an enormous part of it. Certainly was a big part in terms of both stopping points for Miami and setting up opportunities in this game.
Oh yeah, I mean this is I think the biggest change, frankly, to why they're winning games, and comfortably so. I mean maybe the Bears game wasn't super duper comfortable, but they felt a little bit more in control in that game. I felt like then. Mm-hmm. We had seen for the last couple of weeks. And honestly, I like what I'm seeing out of the defense. It seems like they actually are they're starting to try to break on the ball a little bit more. They're playing a little less timid, which is something I was calling for, as we saw these struggles earlier in the year, and leaning on their playmakers. And also, I think they've been attacking the ball better and rallying a little bit better try to get those strip opportunities, which is kind of almost a pure hustle thing. I feel like I hope that they have the stamina and things of that nature to keep that up throughout the rest of the year because it pays dividends.
Yeah, it's the second man of the ball. You know, when you're tackling, you're clubbing, all that kind of stuff is what the Ravens said they were going to do as far back as this summer or spring, that they were going to be on shots on goal defense. You know, that's something I think Trenton Simpson's the first one I heard it from, and he hasn't been to the podium in a long time. So
sure.
I can just tell you that they really talked about this being a shots on goal situation, and they took their shots this time. They had a bunch of them. And they miss some of them. And that's okay. When you get a lot of opportunities, you know, it's, this is one of these cases where aggregating at bats is a good thing. So Roquan Smith, obviously, that's a strikeout in terms of the pass he dropped for what was pretty much a room service interception. And Gilman, for all his crappy tackling in the game, which I know we're going to talk about in this game, I think I would take his overall effort given the one strip and recovery he got in exchange for, say, four missed tackles, which is what he had. And that's a terrible day, by the way, folks. That's an unbelievably bad day. It's a basic job description of the safety, and it cost the Ravens a fair number of total yards on those four missed tackles, but I think I would have taken it.
I think so, too. It was remarkable. I hope it was just a bad day at the office, but we'll get into that later in the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So the secondary addressed nine, so it wasn't – the secondary is okay with nine players, and it's 5 and 4 is what they had. They had Keandre Jackson as an additional safety beyond the three who were in there pretty much – the bulk of snaps, if not, they weren't quite all in there every snap because I think Gilman sat two snaps. Starks didn't sit any snaps this week, had his best game as a pro. We'll get into that. I'm sure I'll get a little bit of needling over wanting Evan Worry over him more, but that's okay.
I mean, I thoroughly
defend that decision, but at this point, you know, this is the good thing about this. Nobody should ever be wedded to their own opinion, particularly on a draft thing. But you can't. You are free to remind people of the times you were right, and also hopefully the times you were wrong on individual players. I've been wrong also before some too. I wanted Ben Cleveland as bad as John Harbaugh did, except John Harbaugh is the one in control of the light switch whether he plays or not, which is unfortunate. But generally speaking, if you go back in terms of the Ravens, the guys I wanted playing safety for the Ravens, it's Hall of Famers.
An unbelievable hit record.
I have an unbelievable hit record with Derwin James, with Xavier McKinney over Patrick Queen, which would have been, oh my God, would that have changed the franchise? Wouldn't it not have gotten Marcus Williams? He'd had the free safety, probably still would have him. He'd be the next Ed Reed for this franchise and just making a ton of money and whatnot. But I was thrilled to get Kyle Hamilton. I wanted Evan Worry off over thing. And Evan Worry looks like a great player. But anyway.
Yeah. One quick thing about that, Ken. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, and I went back and looked today when the NFL was doing that whole, like, you know, rookies of the month situation. Because I thought, because they were both, well, I guess actually was one of them was Dart, so I guess I should have known better. I was thinking to myself, oh, like, they're going to do the NFC one next, because the previous two were like AFC and NFC. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Evan Worry's going to get it, right? Right? but then he didn't. It wasn't
just a general rookie of the month, was it? Did he win defensive rookie of the month, or did he win
defensive? Yeah, it was defense and offense. And I thought, like, I was just, because I saw the AFC NFC, I didn't think too critically. I was like, oh, there'll be an NFC one, let's see what happens. But then I realized the offensive one was Dart, so, like, yeah, it was just mixed for rookies.
Okay, it's an NFL.
Yeah.
Okay, not an
NFL AFC, rookie. NFC. Yeah, gotcha. Offense and defense, and then they had offense and defense for AFC and NFC. Yeah.
All right. But getting back to the Ravens secondary for a minute, Sanusi Kane, Jair Alexander, both inactive. This is really bad news for Sanusi Kane, is all I can say. He basically has been bypassed now by Keandre Jackson on the depth chart.
Yeah.
If you're talking about changes that might be made, obviously they're not happy with some element of his game. The only element that they can truly be unhappy with, I think, is how he's playing special teams, because he's not doing anything else.
Yeah.
And neither is Keandre. Correct. So if they like him more for that, then I'd be concerned. And I also think if they like him more for that, it probably also means they like him more for safety too. So whatever gains he made this summer, and it did seem like that was happening to get ahead at the safety position, and, you know, be the third safety, it looked like it was just largely a null set of choices.
Yeah, it's a really stunning event, honestly. I mean, I guess I'm not stunned that he's not, you know, being a factor. I'm more stunned that I thought he was making progress in the preseason, like you're mentioning, and like, oh, maybe he will be a factor. It sounds like he's completely regressed, and like you said, his job might be in jeopardy now. Very surprising. And honestly, man, it just, we're so top heavy in safeties, it's not even funny. Lowry's gone now, and they have all these special team characters who I don't think they would trust to actually use. And like the defense would immediately be fragile again. I hope we invest some resources and late round picks, whatever, maybe a savvy veteran. Like, this defense sings when it has three safeties, and we're just we're playing with fire with the lack of depth and safety. And we knew that all preseason, right? Like, this was not news per se. We were hoping on, you know, development on these younger guys, but it is surprising to me that they've not prioritized it more.
Right, so they've got changes maybe that could be coming in the future. So if Humphrey moves to safety, that might change things. If Tampa moved to safety, the team is not ready for Tampa to move to safety in even 2026, I'm afraid, because they just don't have much in the way of corners right now. I don't even, you know, we don't even know if Humphrey's going to be back. That's the truth of the matter. He's just $7 million in cap savings if he's cut, and the Ravens don't only have four players they can get any appreciable cap savings from. It's him, Hill, Broderick Washington, and Roquan Smith. So you got two easy ones in there that I think they'll try and harvest both of those low-hanging pieces of fruit. But then Roquan and Humphrey, especially the way they've come back and led this defense, those would be really tough cuts if one of those had to go.
Yeah, it you know, it's $7 million. So you're just thinking to yourself, like, what can I do with that $7 million? Right. Is it better than just keeping a Roquan or a Marlowe? I don't know. We can deal with that later. I think right now, like, that's a future decision. We need to really see the rest of the season, frankly, before we have to really worry about it.
Jaire Alexander, give me your probability that he sees any action the rest of this season. Okay, I'm writing down my number. I always say this whenever we do this.
Any action.
Yeah, it's actually a harder number.
Can we define action as active or actual snaps?
I think if he's got, let's say that he plays at least 50 snaps the rest of the year, because he could come in and he could
play 50 snaps. Or, I mean, this could be 0.1%.
you're at 0.1.
I mean, for 50 snaps, that's a lot. Yeah. For him coming in for a game in some role,
but a game and as a 15? Starting role would be
well, in a starting role, sure. Snaps, but yeah. I mean, that seems very far away. Yeah, I would say
15%.
I would say 15% for a starting role. Like, for 50 snaps, I would say it's much lower than 15%, because I think his true path is package snaps at this point.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like they trust Tampa over him, and they have, you know, four corners at that point.
They have kind of indicated that with the activation they've had. I don't know whether they don't trust Alexander's fragility to go and play special teams again, or Alexander's commitment to it, which is also a possibility.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the biggest mysteries of our time, Ken. Like, it's honestly, like, astounding, the people that we're calling up over him, right? And like you mentioned, like, I would rather have him play special teams than 39, right? Like, in theory, right? I don't know. This is just and have whatever he can bring to the defense. It's a wild chain of events. Like, obviously we were always worried about the injury risk, but now it's like he's a liability even if he's healthy. It's a lot.
That's exactly what the situation is, because he's theoretically healthy right now. But I'm still at 30% that he comes back and plays 50 snaps, and most of that is born of my recollection of some horrible injury years. Is, you know, 2007, Willie Gaston brought in from the street, you know, to play corner. It, that kind of scenario, it's just never that far-fetched when you've got where you got a corner. And all it would take really is maybe one injury and then one guy to play badly, you know, and then all of a sudden it's a very reasonable thing that you have Jaire Alexander on the active game day roster again. And from there he gets playing time somehow. It's just not that far-fetched, I'm afraid, for 50 snaps. Anyway.
Well, hopefully he plays like something of a remnant of his past self, and it's not the worst. You know, let's be honest, this defense has had a lot of issues. They still have issues, but they are fixing them slowly but surely, and maybe he's fixing things too. I don't know. But I wanted to believe Harbaugh when he said that it was easy fixes for the defense, because I could kind of like believe it. I could kind of see it, right? And it seems like they're starting to make those fixes and things are starting to get better. So fingers crossed.
I got a different feeling about that. I would say they have some serious structural problems on the defense that are quite difficult to fix. You know, the lack of another interior pass rusher beyond Jones is something they don't really have a good solution for. This Mickey Mouse playing Simpson as a stand-up inside guy is not going to work. And they're you know, they're just basically reusing him as a roving guy at the line of scrimmage. They were effectively using three pass rushers, and Simpson is a find your gap guy. I don't think that really is working. I don't think they've anywhere come close to replacing the early down snaps from Tavius Robinson. So they've got that problem. They're one injury away from, you know, oblivion at several different positions, including, the big three defenders, certainly maybe the big four defenders, if you include Wiggins in that. I'm not saying every team doesn't have some component of this, that there's three or four players they just can't afford to lose. The Ravens just are extremely thin at the front five slots right now. In terms of how they would replace those guys.
Yeah. The team that we thought had like this prestigious depth, it got eaten alive very quickly. We're feeling it either by players not playing to any good standard, and then just a lot of injuries to the defensive line and outside linebacker trade, and just, you know, things and the injuries there too, I suppose, as well, you know. So it's definitely tough. I think we agree more than we disagree there, Ken. What I'm saying is, with the healthiness that they have, I can see a path towards a defense that is opportunistic enough and capable enough to make stops and be good enough for this offense to, you know, overcome, for lack of better words. But to see like a top five unit, that seems far fetched given injuries will happen, you know, and things of that nature. But I don't think you need a top five unit to necessarily win in the NFL these days. But I will say, it's obviously nice. But yeah, that path, which I thought was a path at the beginning of the season, is eroded. It's gone. And frankly, the Madubuike injury and stuff is everything, right? That's, you can't just replace that. Most teams don't have it. Which is like, I guess the silver lining is like a lot of teams also don't have it. So maybe you can only win if you have it. We'll see.
There's two things about this. And one is, I think, and obviously Harbaugh, because Harbaugh's always judged in every single facet of the team that goes wrong. But I think Orr is being judged a lot based on what people think he ought to have delivered relative to the personnel the team had at the start of the season, relative to their total payroll on defense, relative to all those things. And they had an incredibly deep seeming defensive unit to start the season. It's just a lot of people got old kind of quickly. And some other people just haven't played up to the level expected. And the Nnamdi Madubuike injury is just about as devastating and heartbreaking an injury as you can have. But they also lost Tavius Robinson, who's a great young player. And they lost Ardarius Washington, who's a great young player. He might be back. Maybe Tavius will be back. But it's that's really a shame that that these things have happened. In any case, kind of forgot where it was going with this last year. Yes. I think if you judge Orr based on like what he has right now, I think he's actually making good progressive steps to try and adjust to the realities of the current situation. Like, he's really leaned into playing two nose tackles on the line and trying to be a space hogging defense. It hasn't completely worked in terms of shutting down the run, but it's been better than it was, and a lot better than it was. And it certainly hasn't worked from a pass rushing perspective, but they've gotten a little bit better pressure, against a couple quarterbacks who don't have it all put together. He's tried to take more risk, I think, and I think that's been good. Leaning into the Kyle Hamilton thing is potentially risky. We do have a question about that, by the way, which I think is a really good one. Mm-hmm. But that's potentially risky, but it's also, a big payoff. And I think also the fact that they've got Roquan back has and Humphrey for that matter has underscored how valuable the leadership was to the defense and how bad it was to be missing that in terms of both the on-field leadership of a Humphrey, but also the centrality that Roquan Smith plays on this defense.
Correct. No, I agree with you. Let's continue with the rest of the show.
All right. I'm sorry. Let's keep.
No, you're fine.
We're about 27 minutes in here. We got to be careful. So Dolphins managed 4.4 yards per carry. Absence of quality edge setters, I think, is really the key you got to talk about here. They had an assist from some awful tackling. So Gilman particular was a big part of that, but he's not the only one. There were a few other missed tackles that were tossed in there. I'm not sure if PFF's missed tackle, they have one missed tackle for Hamilton, I noticed. I'm not sure if they called it on that reverse play where it would have been a very tough tackle for him. You know, he's trying to get off a block and make a tackle, but he did a great job to basically stuff the runner and stand him up that way and force him to reverse his field and then everyone overran that play. So yeah, you had some problems there as well. I don't know. I think the 4.4 yards per carry, I think, is better than is pretty good given the circumstances of the things that went wrong for, mm-hmm. for the Ravens and against Devon Achane.
Well, here's what I would say, Ken. I think the thing that's cool about that, the whole Dolphins run game, is that it was clearly the only thing that was working. And they abandoned it anyways because we had a lead, right? and it made them one-dimensional. I mean, I'm always a proponent of holding onto the run a little longer than you might want to, because I just think, I know Tua had that big comeback, you know, but he's a spot thrower, and I think our defense is opportunistic with that. I wasn't surprised that we had an interception on him, like something that we tend to do with that kind of style of quarterback. And I was watching it and being like, man, like your chance of getting.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Back in this game is an explosive run from Achane. Like that, he's your like best player. yeah, you know what I mean? And they just abandoned it. And I was like, great, you do that. Sounds good to me.
he's their whole offense. I mean, he came into the league the same year Keaton Mitchell did, and he was even better, you know, because he did it for longer than Mitchell did. He's a good receiver too. He's value there. So, I mean, every touch is potentially dangerous. I thought the same thing. And when you watch Tua play quarterback, the other thing that really jumps out off the screen at you is that quarterbacks, they have a good clock. Sometimes they don't, but sometimes you can have too fast a clock too. So the guy who has no clock at all is Tyler Huntley. No idea what's going on in the pocket around him. No ability to time events and keep track of things and whatnot. He's just running around and he's just will accept a sack every once in a while. A lot of other mobile quarterbacks in the history of the game, Michael Vick, early Randall Cunningham, had the same problem. Is they never really thought that it's time to get rid of the football. They just always thought I could extend the play. And it worked mostly to their own detriment early in their careers. In terms of guys who have a normal clock, Lamar Jackson is right in the middle. He knows when he's got to move. He's a magician of understanding how to move from bump pressure, get away from that. And he's worked very well with other Ravens linemen who knew how to deliver that to him, as opposed to delivering him beats on the outside that led to worse events. And then I think Tua is the far extreme of the other example, a guy who gets antsy as hell as time moves forward to the point of tremendous ineffectiveness without the pocket necessarily being dirty. And he's had a lot of clean pockets in this game and had a lot of difficulty throwing with ample time and space, as we're going to get to later. It's just ridiculous, frankly, in fact, how ineffective he was.
I love it, Ken. Yeah. They've got a lot of work to do in the Miami. It's one of those things, man. You get excited that they won the game. You know, it's a big deal for the team, but it's like, man, this is not like that good of a team. So like, let's hold our horses too. They got a lot to work on over there.
It still counts. A 22-point win on the road on a Thursday is a big freaking win. And the Ravens got nothing to be embarrassed about with a win like this.
You play who you play. Yeah. You can't get mad about it. Yep.
All right, let's move on and talk packages a little bit, because the Ravens really went vanilla in this game. So normally they get large, they try and stop the run, at least on a third and one, a fourth and one somewhere. They didn't use jumbo in this game, but they didn't even use base, not one time in the entire freaking game. Not one time.
Ken, this is a big surprise for me, because I knew about
the offensive linemen.
I know about the six offensive linemen thing. So Ken, I did a show with a Dolphins fan friend of mine that does, you know, does a podcast, and I went on there and I was like, you know, you guys using that six offensive lineman is actually really interesting to me because that could get us into our base defense, which we're not as keen on. And I'm curious, like, you could manipulate us to get Hamilton out of the box potentially, things of that nature. And I was telling him, like, that's going to be really interesting. I'm curious how the Ravens respond. And they just said, we don't care. You know, he's a tight end in our book, right? So, cool. I mean, that's neat. And I think, Ken, frankly, going back on our previous conversation about 4.4 yards per carry, I don't hate that. I think it's decent that they got 4.4 yards per carry given that circumstance of that they were that committed to the nickel, even in that, you know, mismatch.
So the nickel in this case is big nickel for starters. So you have a Hamilton up at the line of scrimmage as your slot corner. Right now, that's a lot of additional run defense you're adding. A lot of defense, additional near the line defense. So you have that. And we definitely saw that in this game in terms of Hamilton making his presence felt in the backfield. They had the tackle for -3. He had other plays where he just set the edge and turned that play to the inside. He had the big, you know, reverse play where they didn't get a stop, but he had made a good play on them in there in the backfield, like 8 or 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage to basically get that turned around. But the other thing is it didn't mean they went with nickel with two defensive linemen. They went uncovered nickel, which was the bulk of the other nickel they played. So they played 32 snaps of plain vanilla big nickel, which to be clear with other people here that are online, I know you probably know this, Alec, but a big nickel, three safeties and two corners. Mm-hmm. The uncovered nickel could be three corners and two safeties, but it's three safeties and two corners in the Ravens case. But what you're doing is you're dropping an outside linebacker and adding back in a third defensive lineman. And so what they did in those snaps was put in Brent Urban to play the edge effectively. And he played outside shoulder of the offensive tackle. And what they did invariably on those plays is they ran somebody up to the line of scrimmage. And on some of the dime snaps, it was actually, I wish it was not dime snaps. That's not correct. On some of the snaps, it was Teddy Buchanan. On some of the snaps, it was Hamilton running up to play the edge of that formation. So they really had a variation of things they were showing him. They weren't just giving him an opportunity to target Urban, who is, by the way, a great space denier, and I think should be a guy who could effectively set the edge versus a tackle. But they didn't. The Ravens didn't let the Dolphins have that easy a run at it, so to speak. They put other defenders out there who they thought could be effective in the form of Buchanan and Hamilton in particular.
And then in your nomenclature, jumbo nickel would be just different linebackers?
Jumbo nickel, you take out an inside linebacker and replace him with a defensive lineman and keep your nickel alignment. So the player you lose in jumbo nickel, you lose an inside linebacker. In uncovered nickel, you lose an outside linebacker.
I see.
That makes sense. Gotcha. And in big nickel, you lose your slot corner and you replace him with a safety.
I got you.
Okay.
So okay.
I try to define that in the articles that have been out in the past. If you want to check the website for folks out there.
Honestly, I was drawing a blank. That's why I asked you. Cause I think I've mixed up big and jumbo in my head sometimes.
Okay.
So, yeah. Good.
So jumbo is just, that's the one where the safeties really have to be good run fitters. Cause you've only got one inside linebacker. So it's it's a different way. The Ravens could play that too, but they've gotten away from that for whatever reason. They played, you know, just a couple snaps of it this year. But anyway, none this week. And it was perfectly reasonable thing to try against a team like the Dolphins to get big at the line of scrimmage. Did not play a single snap of standard nickel. I believe it's now been three consecutive weeks with zero standard nickel snaps. So it does not matter who you put in the slot against Kyle Hamilton. The Ravens will not move out of it. Now, they'll move out of it on dime. They'll move him into the slot on dime. Move him into Will linebacker on dime and move Humphrey into the slot on dime. But they will not do it. I don't think it would matter if you had Edelman or Welker or whoever else you could name from the history of football that would be a bad matchup for Hamilton. I'm not sure they would do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really fascinating. And then we have a decent amount of dime.
Yeah, a decent amount of dime in this game. First of all, they had the privilege to play a lot of dime because they went to it fairly early in the fourth quarter when the Dolphins were trying to make their comeback. So that's the Ravens' preferred dime method. If you look back to the 2019 team that played 42% dime for the years, because they had big leads all the time and they could do it. And they do it at the end of the half to stop the drive. And they played a couple different dimes there. They played some three safety dime. They played a four corner dime at the end of the half when they took Gilman off the field, which, by the way, in a situation where you need a tackle, seems like that might be a good idea right now. So you don't want to be letting somebody running down the field with needing him to make the stop for you. But they played three different types of dimes anyway. And one of them included Taven Bryant and Jones at the line of scrimmage. The other was Simpson and Jones at the line of scrimmage. The other was this four corner three safety switch off that they did. So they were pretty effective in dime this week. 19 snaps, 87 yards, 4.6 yards per play. They gave up 5.6 yards per play in Big Nickel. Big Nickel's been very effective since they started that. It just seems like they're what they want to run every single down with Hamilton at the line of scrimmage is something they're willing to die on right now.
Yeah, and actually going back to the jumbo nickel versus uncovered nickel, it could just be a byproduct of the personnel, right? Mm-hmm. They're just like, we can use getting outside linebacker out of here because of the snap counts.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that could be a big part of it too.
Yeah, I agree completely. They don't have enough outside linebacker snaps to give. It's kind of like if you have only really two big men in basketball and you've got to defend two big men. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you just don't have enough fouls to give is what it ends up being. And you need additional bodies somehow to do that. I mean, they used to say that there was a guy who played St. John's. I think his name is Marco Baldi in the 80s. One of the announcers said one of the things that I've maintained in my set of things I'll say about a player is the most valuable thing he had was five fouls to give.
So, yeah, that's really funny.
All right. Let's see what else we got. Let's talk about the pass rush a little bit and move on.
Sure.
Okay. How are we doing on time here? We're doing fine. So first of all, I'll say that Tua had quite a good opportunity set that he's working with. So he got ample time and space 14 times. That's 34% of the time. That itself is about 6 points higher maybe than I would expect normally. Maybe about 28% these days is about normal. We've seen the Ravens down in the teens on some of their own opportunity sets. And we've seen him give it up into the 40s at some points this year, but 34 is above average. The funny thing was he only got 6.3 yards per play on those attempts, and that included the interception was an ATS throw. So when you're giving away stupid crap like that, frankly, it's, and I know the game was basically over at the time. He felt like he needed to push the ball down the field and make a play. It's not really a terrible risk at that point, but he just didn't do well in these situations for the whole game at 6.3 yards per play. I'd expect about 8.5. So he was about 30 yards below the standard just for that group of 14 plays, or about 2 yards per play less than I'd expect.
Yeah, I mean, they just also lacked a lot of the horses in this game, just from a wide receiver's perspective. Not as threatening as they were, you know, when they had Hill, for instance, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. So, you know, I think Malik Washington and Westbrook Akine weren't giving anyone nightmares. And I think that was a big contributing factor. So you made sure Waddle was covered, and the rest was kind of history when it came to the ample time and space, in my opinion.
Yeah, they went to the tight end a lot in this game, didn't they? I got to go back and see how many targets he actually gave. The number 85,
yeah,
I was one of. He almost seems like he's Croft now because every good tight end seems like he's Croft. They went to Achane 10 times in the game, but only for 39 yards. That gives you an idea of
Dulcich.
He had 5 for 49, so he was good. Mm-hmm. And then didn't they? That is the guy. That's the long haired guy, right? Dulcich.
Yeah, yeah.
They went to Wilson only one time. It's extremely well defended, and they made the play anyway. So, all right.
Yep.
A couple of things about the pass rush. Ball out quick. Now, this is where Tua usually has a lot of his throws because he has that speeded up clock, and he's trying to get rid of the ball so quickly. And you better get rid of it quickly because with every passing tenth of a second, you're more and more antsy. Well, anyway, 121 yards, 7.6 yards per play. He did throw well on those plays. About 25 yards above his standards. So he's not too far off expectation between ample time and space and ball out quick. But within that group, he also had a 10-yard intentional grounding. Now let's think about how ridiculous that is. Why should you ever give up an intentional grounding on a play where you are not under pressure. First of all, the definition of intentional grounding almost precludes it, because the intentional grounding says you're in imminent danger of loss. Okay, you can actually you can spike the ball. People know that at the line of scrimmage. You're not in imminent danger of loss. You do that. The pressure had just barely shown itself, but it wasn't the pressure yet in terms of the two guys on the offensive right side had beaten their men. I think one was Green, and it might have been Van Noy, actually, or might have been somebody else who was in that, coming through that B gap. I don't remember. Maybe Buchanan. Not sure exactly. Let's just say I don't remember. But anyway, those two guys had both kind of shown themselves to make themselves visible. We'll call it to a left-handed quarterback, of course. That's his blind side. And all of a sudden, he rolls 2 feet to his left, makes the laziest throw you'll ever see, nowhere near anybody and short of the line of scrimmage. How on earth do you take an intentional grounding play like that? How on earth do you do that? Just every element of it is wrong. And all out quicks, I mean, 100% of them are passes. And this was too. It was an incomplete pass. And then it's a 10-yard penalty tacked on with loss of down. But how on earth do you get an intentional grounding in that situation?
Yeah. He looked so off throughout the game. You know, he threw that errant ball and on the fourth down play, and it was like not even close, you know, and things of that nature. So yeah, they were not in sync. That offense was not in sync, and it looked like a team already checked out on the season, frankly. So yeah, that happy that we're not, you know, Dolphins fans.
Yeah. Well, you can see they're a very upset group right now. And they're almost like it's almost like a team that's, I would say, they're not proud of what's happening to their team, but they're almost like proud of the fact that they're fans who can endure what their team is doing to them. That's how I would describe it. Mm-hmm. And so the people sitting next to us are reveling in the jokes they can make about this current Dolphins team. You see all these fans in the stand who are wearing bags. I mean, what that's saying is, screw you. We're going to be here long, long after you are, in terms of the Dolphins coaches and whatnot. And we're going to tell you exactly what you think of you visually, without having to, you know, lift our hands and extend our middle fingers.
Yeah. Well, Greer got fired, or mutual parting ways, whatever you want to do. And they were ecstatic about this. My friend that I did the show with, was thanking me for beating them so that this could happen. Like they're like, that's the saga. And he's like, oh, McDaniel gets to stay. Great. Like we'll have a better draft pick next year. Like, you know, this is the mindset right now of Dolphins fans. They're really being down.
Right. Well, we've seen it in the division, some from Browns and the Bengals in the distant past. And, you know, them not being particularly happy about their team, but certainly from the Browns who've had their downtrodden periods. And those are great football fans, but they know how to endure. And it's one reason why fans always want the draft pick more than ownership, the general manager, or the coach currently. Everybody else in that group, all the other three, have much shorter time horizons on success, including the owner. Okay. The fan says, I can wait. I'm only 35 now. By the time I'm 75, you guys are going to be good again. You know, they're happy. You know, they're happy to start talking draft picks in September. And I think we see a lot of that, unfortunately, in Ravens fans, but we see it in like Wizards fans in terms of, you know, the right choice is to tank this year. Well, it probably is, you know, but you know, I personally don't want to hear that. You know, the reason why I don't need to get into it again. But anyway, I that's what I sense from the Dolphins fans is that they're not happy about the current situation, but they know they can endure it for longer than McDaniel can, for sure. Yeah. But even then, ownership can. Ownership won't put up for it for very long, and the team's not going anywhere from Miami. So I was like, I'll hold on my season tickets for at least a few years.
Sure.
All right. All right. Pressure, 11 plays, only 27% pressure in the game. It's completely unacceptable. The standard is to get a little more pressure than ATS, and they allowed 14 ATS, only had 11 pressure. Only 36 net yards on this play, 3.3 yards per play. That's below expectation, but only by 3 yards. They didn't turn the ball over there that I'm aware of. I actually didn't properly slot the where the pass fumble was within this group, but it didn't have anything to do with Tua. So there's not really a need to do that, I don't think. But he was below expectation by 9 yards overall, or 19 if you include that intentional grounding, which I think is entirely appropriate in terms of how he performed relative to the opportunity set.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see, kind of going into the next bullet too, that Orr didn't rush with 5+ as often as he did in the last 2 weeks. Because I guess part of me thinks like, oh, like I would like to speed up Tua even more, you know, and try to be hot. And also, like, kind of going back to my previous statement, I think that I don't mind them being a little bit more aggressive and leaning into the variance of defense and trying to just, you know, get the turnover, you get the get the incompletion, things of that nature. So yeah, I was a little surprised to see that, and I'm curious, frankly, how they approach next week, you know, against the Vikings with the rookie quarterback and all that. So we'll see. Like you mentioned, Orr's trying to do the best he can with the personnel he has, and it's a weird group, particularly in the defensive line, edge rusher perspective. So we'll see how they proceed.
Yeah, I'm with you entirely. I just listening to your point there, the fourth quarter. Okay, so the Ravens had the game essentially won at this point after three quarters being up 28-6. Mm-hmm. So the last play of the third quarter was a drive that started for the Dolphins. So the rest of the game, the pass rush was 4-4-4-4-4-4-6-4-5-4-4-4-4-4. So basically, they went to the 4-man rush in the fourth quarter. And they did. They were doing more to generate variance early on in that game. But obviously something we harp on this show a lot of times is how much the value of variance accrues to the defense and not to the offense. You know the game is loaded in the Ravens' favor. The analogy I'd make is if you're going in to play, blackjack is a really bad game to use this as a rule. You don't want to bet all your money on one hand because it actually reduces your chance to win that hand because you can't double. To maximize the value of your hand, you get double. But with a craps bet or a baccarat bet, it's a better example. You're really better off just betting all your money on one roll or on one player or bank bet in baccarat. If you do that, you know the house has a hard time dealing with your variance. And offense is the house in the current NFL, and defense is the player. They are playing at a disadvantage, and it's very clear at all times this is the case. And the defense has to go after that variance in order to win. They have to take some risk of giving up some points in order to get the other team off the field.
Yep.
All right. What else we got to say? Five. They were effective rushing five, 4.7 yards per play. 27% of the time was a lower rate than they had against Houston or Chicago at 42 and 41% respectively. But the 4.7 yards per play is in part a function of the Dolphins are trying to come back late. It's garbage time. And I frankly thought Tua was probably highly careful of interceptions on most of those throws, with the exception of the bomb that Starks picked off. I thought that he was pretty careful not putting the ball in harm's way. Roquan.
Yeah, happens. I wish I wasn't terribly surprised. That's not a dig on Roquan or anything. It just feels like sometimes the easiest ones are the ones that they'll drop. So, yeah, I guess I would agree. I think, you know, the 11 plays of 5+, it was okay. But frankly, what I enjoyed seeing the most, and I think what they need to build on, is the deceptive elements. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that they need to lean into that as much as they can, because I think against higher end offenses, that's going to be better than blitzing with pure numbers.
You know what's interesting about that? Okay, let's start with the blitz, because it's simple. So they did 7 blitzes, 1 double, 0.17 per play, which is quite low. They only had 14 net yards on those 6 plays. There's 1 double among 7 total blitzes, so 6 plays they were spread amongst. So 2.3 yards per play. 3 pressures on those, 2 ample time and spaces, a ball out quick. That's kind of thing you're doing when you blitz, is you're risking giving up some really big plays that may occur on an ATS or BOQ if you get stuffed, and then you're going to get a good play a lot of the times when you get a pressure of any sort. And they did very effectively on those. So no problem in it, and totally aligns with the comment you're making about leaning into that deception. Here's where some of this breaks down. The stunts, you would think they would do a lot more of them. And I had multiple reasons why I thought they'd do more this game. They've been successful in some stunt looks recently. That's mm-hmm. number one. And you see some people on Twitter are talking about it. It's based on almost no stunts. They've done almost no stunts. I mean, Orr has clearly called it off for the last three or four games in terms of any ability to call stunts on the field. So whatever you're seeing in terms of a play, it's like those you're seeing all two or three plays that they stunted the entire game, which is absurdly low by Ravens standards of the past. The Wink Martindale era, oh, stunt whatever you want. Call it the field. I'll call it some, you know, the only time you can't do it is when he's got a blitz call. That's the only time you can't do it. But they have much more clamps on that this year, clearly, because the stunt totals are so low. And you have Tua in the pocket, who's not a threat to run, by the way.
Yeah.
And he's run for 3.5 yards per carry this year. I mean, he's not an elite mobility quarterback anymore, if he ever was. And it surprised me that they didn't do more stunting. Just did three times, and they were successful again doing it. 1.3 yards per play, included the interception. But for whatever reason, they decided they didn't want to empower the players to do more of those on field.
Yeah, I've been really surprised by that as well. I really have no other comment than that. I do hope that they lean into it more. And like you said, it seems like this team's like good at it. You know, like they've had a lot of success with it. It looks like a clean operation when they do it. Hopefully they can figure out a way to build into more of their plan. I mean, what is the disadvantage if they're not blitzing to calling a stunt? You know, I guess against a quarterback like Tua.
Yeah.
let me qualify. Yeah.
Or Stafford for that matter, or another guy who, you know, isn't mobile and isn't going to burn you that way. I guess the quarterbacks who get the ball out quickly, there's a secondary problem is that you're pretty much always going to give them the amount of time they typically want to get rid of the football. Yeah. If you stunt, because those take a little longer to develop. But I just, the advantage you give the underneath guy in particular on stunts, I really like. And they got guys like Travis Jones or Jenkins, honestly, who could probably benefit from that. And I'd just like to see more of it.
Yeah.
All right. Simulated pressures, they ran five of those during the game. That also is a fairly low number, but 3.0 yards per play with simulated pressure. The interception was on a combination stunt simulated. I think it was actually all three, which is one of the only times I've seen it. Yep, a stunt, a blitz, and a simulated pressure. And the simulated pressure was no normal simulated pressure. It was a 4-4 look. So they had eight guys at the line of scrimmage, and they dropped four. They also had a blitz, and they had a stunt. The blitz, it's like, where would you get a ninth guy even? What was the slot corner Humphrey blitzing? So they were willing to try a really juicy one there at the end of the game and got an interception on it. So that was neat.
Yeah, that was neat. It might have been, just a seal the game way and like kind of garbage time, but it was nice to see it. Hopefully we can build off that.
Yeah, try and use some multiple pressure things. He only had three plays with two elements in the whole game, and they only gained 9 yards with one interception on the three plays. So that was, you know, definitely something that was effective in this particular game. Nobody had a lot of pressures in this game. Actually, Travis Jones led the team in pressures and I guess cemented why he's one of the really critical players on defense. But he had half of a sack minus six, and he had two pressures of his own. Looked really good, I thought. And the other guy who I don't think a lot of people would guess in pretty much any number of guesses or not people watch the game probably might, but Brent Urban had half of a sack minus six. He had a pressure and he had one late QH. So it's after 3 seconds. Doesn't really count as a pressure as I do it, but hey, knock the quarterback on the ground, and that's pretty good. I thought Brent Urban had one of his best games as a Raven.
I completely agree with you. He is. I was joking in our chat that first downs are literally his job. You know, he's there on first down and he knows it. And I thought he had a great set of first downs in this game. it's great. And honestly, like I'm just pleased to see that because. Frankly, like losing Tavius Robinson, we've already talked about at the top, but what a huge loss that was. And he too was, a presence on first downs. You know, he frequently was in there on first downs and playing well. And it's good to see someone's picking up a little bit of the slack. It may not be the same position, but, they're picking up some of that slack.
Urban is a guy who's done whatever the Ravens have really needed him to do over the years and been available to them whenever they needed him. And I don't want to say they've abused the relationship because I'm not sure that's fair. A player like Urban's very realistic about who he is at this point in his career. He's an NFL survivor. He's, every year he doesn't know in camp if he's really got a job and he might very well be headed to the practice squad. And he's probably, even if he's going to make the team, he's going to be a handshake deal that, that somebody else makes the team so they can go on injured reserve so he can, you know, then be brought in later. And this year, it wasn't even that nice. They you know, they brought him in really late. They sent him to the practice squad. He spent a few weeks there before they activated him. And then, you know, he's been a hell of an important player in the last month or so for the Ravens in terms of getting this defense straightened out a little bit.
Yep. I'm pleased that he's around. You know, it's sometimes we're wondering if we need Michael Pierce back.
Yeah.
You know? And at least we got one of them.
All right. Alec, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online if they want to.
Sure. You can find me on my website, Pulianis.com. And I still have my handles everywhere. You can reach out to me on X, or you can reach out to me on Blue Sky, wherever. I'm on all those places.
And yeah, you still have a Discord you're running for the Ravens?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. The One Mini Pod might be retired, but the Discord is not. It's actually more lively than ever, and that's kind of nice. If you have interest in that, let me know as well.
All right. Very cool. Other folks out there, thanks as always for your listening. We're coming up on the bye week. I did have one person submit a fantastic idea for a film study short, so we're going to be doing that one, but I have room for another. If you'd like to do one, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter, and I would love to hear from you. These things get turned around very quickly in terms of an idea. It's almost like you're calling into a radio station. They're going to reject or accept your idea right away. And 90% of the time, I'm saying, if you are passionate about the thing, I want to talk to you about it. So let's hear from you. Thanks again. If you want to do one other thing to promote the show, please tell one new person about it. That's all I ask. Tell them about the website. Tell them how to get there. Show them maybe how to play the pod directly from the website would be ideal if it's an older person in particular. Thanks for listening again, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.